Mr. Blumenthal?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Mike Blumenthal. I represent Augustine Forcor, the appellant in this matter. I'm not sure that the facts or the law are...
Could you speak up a little bit?
Yes, Your Honor. I've been told that for 25 years or 20 years. Please forgive me. I'm not sure that the facts, and I'm not sure that the law are particularly sophisticated or require that I pretend to have some assistance for the court. I do have a couple of thoughts that I do think matter. With regard to the question of collateral estoppel, counsel argues in, or appellee, I should say, argues in its brief that the question whether there's a business or non-business use and the question of whether a respondeat superior relationship exists are two distinct questions, and therefore, for purposes of collateral estoppel, the issues are distinct. In the Empire Fire and Marine case cited heavily by actually both sides that was decided by the Court of Appeals of Maryland, they cite with approval the case of Lime City Mutual versus Mullins, and the parentheses in the language following that case, again, in the Empire Fire and Marine case, says that that court implicitly...
How is Empire collaterally estopped when they weren't a party?
Well,
the underlying litigation. That would be an unusual view of collateral estoppel, wouldn't it?
Well, there's of course, the case I cite that says that the insurer is in privity to a party. And the question, I think, is addressed there. Beyond that, they certainly were invited to participate in the litigation. They stand in the shoes of Mr. Mahdi. They were as insured. The potentiality rule cried out for them to be in that courtroom. They ignored that. They ignored repeated requests by every party to the underlying action to involve themselves. So they ignore the potentiality rule, don't walk into the courtroom, allow Mr. Mahdi to walk in pro se. He was too scared to do so and didn't even show up. And had they done so, they certainly wouldn't be here saying we weren't a party to the action and we couldn't control the proceedings.
If Empire had been litigating it in the underlying litigation, wouldn't it have been litigating under a conflict? I mean, because they would have been trying to defeat coverage in the underlying litigation at the same time it was supposed to do, the same time they were supposed to defend the insured. So how can there be privity in that situation when, if they'd been litigating in the underlying litigation, they would have been in conflict with the interest of the insured?
Well, we don't know what Mr. Mahdi's position was. Mr. Mahdi didn't show up at trial. Mr. Mahdi may very well have taken the very same position as Empire. Had Empire seen fit to enter, I suspect that they also would have brought in the other carrier, the business use carrier, and then there wouldn't have been, even if a conflict of sorts, which we don't know even existed, because again, Mr. Mahdi wasn't there, the matter would have been able to be resolved. And they certainly didn't conflict with Mr. Mahdi with regards to the question whether Mr. Mahdi was responsible for the accident, and had they seen fit to show up, I'm sure they would have very vigorously argued that he wasn't responsible for the accident.
But the trial court's finding that Mahdi was not acting in the furtherance of J&J logistics, it wasn't necessary and essential to the judgment, was it?
Well,
and if it's not necessary, why should it be given a preclusive effect?
Well, it certainly was a critical issue at the trial. J&J Logistics was in there and extricated itself from the courtroom. So to the extent that you isolate and look at their relationship in that courtroom, it was the central issue.
Well, one question I had was were you picking the wrong insurance company here? Didn't Progressive Insurance Company issue a policy to J&J for commercial use of the tractor?
Picking them at the, in the underlying adjudication, Your Honor, or picking them in my declaratory judgment?
I was surprised. Why wasn't, if you were seeking an insurer here, why didn't you go after, or why didn't you bring an action against Progressive? Or why isn't Progressive the one whose policy, because this maybe Empire brought this because it was a declaratory judgment action, but why wouldn't Progressive, the policy of Progressive, be the one at play here in the sense that Progressive had issued J&J an insurance policy for use of the commercial use of the tractor?
Given the findings in the underlying action, and particularly the finding with regards to J&J logistics, it prudent seemed to dictate that I pursue as the
would
this, fire.
Would there be coverage for this liability coverage for this accident under the Progressive policy?
That question will ultimately be answered. Not
pardon me.
That question will ultimately be answered. It's, I guess, not part of this record. I hope it's not inappropriate.
I understand, yeah. But I mean, you're not. There may well be coverage, is what I'm.
May well be, and there is pending.
What I'm saying is that there's been no adjudication that Progressive's policy doesn't cover this mishap.
There has not.
It just seemed to me, in a way, that would be the most logical one, because it was a J&J truck and it had all the J&J indicia on it and the J&J number on it. And it's not as if J&J is uninsured. There is an insurance policy here governing the commercial use of the tractor.
There is. There, you know, of course, in the Empire Fire and Marine case decided by the Court of Appeals of Maryland, with precisely this provision at issue, we had those things as well. The ICC carrier's name, the ICC number was on the truck, and in that instance, the Court of Appeals had found that it was still a non-business use. So, you know, I just offer that in response to what Your Honor indicated.
Because they could have bottomed this case on the ground that Mahdi was an independent contractor, not an agent, and not reached that issue of in the furtherance of J&J's business. I mean, isn't it just gratuitous on the part of the Court of Appeals?
In the Empire Fire and Marine decision that they, well, I'm not sure that it is. There is, in any moment in a trucker's day, business and non-business use, and of course the court needs to distinguish, the two, if in fact an accident happens. And in the Court of Special Appeals opinion, I thought they very, very carefully looked at every part of that driver's relationship to the business at the time that the collision took place. So I thought it was a very reasoned and very supported decision.
What is your position before the court today? Did it arise out of a business use or a personal use?
At the time of the accident, yeah, we think it was crystal clear, and I think the appellee is a cloudily stopped from arguing otherwise, that Mr. Mahdi was engaged in the non-business use of his truck at the time of the accident, thereby triggering appellee Empire Fire and Marine's policy of insurance.
Which was inconsistent with your position when you sued J&J in the underlying suit.
Well, at that time, we hadn't done discovery. It was brand new litigation. That trial took place. At that trial.
That's a dangerous way to get discovery at trial.
We did get answers to interrogatories I cite in, it's part of the brief that, and in the record. So we did have that, and they denied a business relationship.
Matter of fact, you told the jury before the evidence came in that very likely that J&J is going to walk away.
The state of the evidence when I walked into that courtroom, Your Honor, was that J&J Logistics denied having a business relationship with Mahdi at the time of the accident. Their answers to interrogatories under oath and the limited documents that they gave me all were entirely consistent with that position. Mr. Mahdi, the driver, never participated in the litigation, probably scared off by the failure to get counsel. The only information then I had was the information provided by J&J Logistics, and I proceeded consistent with my evidence. I could not have.
Which would have, inconsistent evidence would have been a non-suit against them.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Withdrawing your suit against J&J.
I'm not, I went to trial. I had J&J there, I went to trial with them. They, if I non-suited it and later some, you know, additional information came up that could have connected me to them, I would draw that. I would draw that.
How does this get to be a personal use when you were going to Giant to pick up a load for delivery at J&J's request? It doesn't, you know, he was instructed to go to Giant by J&J personnel. He was under a dispatch. The only reason he was on the road was because J&J had instructed him to go on the road. He was there. He was working in furtherance of J&J's business. They were the ones that were going to profit from this trip. How does this get to be some sort of personal use when he's acting under those kinds of instructions?
There's no case in this circuit, and there was no case in Maryland that took this precise scenario and defined whether the relationship was a business or a non-business use, looking at what was important to the Court of Appeals in the...
But if this isn't a business use, what would be a business use?
In the Court of Appeals opinion, Empire what? Fire Marine, in the Empire Fire Marine Court of Appeals opinion that is cited, that takes this policy, they found very important the fact that the gentleman had left his place of employment and returned to the home terminal.
Are you talking about Empire Fire versus Liberty Mutual?
Yes, Your Honor. Yeah,
that case is very different because the court said he was not en route to pick up or deliver a trailer at the time of the accident. But the point is, he is en route. The Court of Appeals, the Court of Special Appeals decision in that 1997 case specifically distinguishes the situation we have here from the situation that was before it. Because they said, well, he wasn't en route. He finished. He delivered his trailer to the Baltimore warehouse in that 1997 case. He totally completed the dispatch. His next dispatch wasn't going to be until January 23rd, and he completed it. His previous dispatch, on Monday, January 16th. And here, there's no completion of the dispatch at all. He's going, he's under the dispatch. And I kept looking for, well, what's your best Maryland case for the proposition you're trying to come up with? And you bring up this Court of Special Appeals decision in 1997. It seemed to me very different.
There's no question that a key factor to the court was in the 1997 case was that driver was going home.
But he completed his dispatch. I think his truck was in the Baltimore shop for repairs.
Well, you had actually finished the repairs, and they said, well, if he's repairing it, maybe that makes it a business use. Here, Ms.
I'm just saying, if you're going to do this, and you think about it, because you've reserved a lot of time for rebuttal, you need to come up with a Maryland case. It's a whole lot more on point than this 1997 case, which works against you. You think about that. Now, you've got 7 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Mr. Wolf.
Thank you, Your Honors. Joseph Wolf, representing Empire Fire and Marine Insurance Company, the appellee. To address several of the questions that the court raised during appellant's argument, Empire was not invited to be a party to the underlying action. Empire was asked to provide a defense to Mr. Mahdi, and based on its investigation determined, and actually based subsequently on the allegations of the amended complaint, that there was no coverage. Mr. Mahdi's sworn statement, and then his recorded statement, and the lease of the tractor to J&J, and the use of the ICC numbers and the placard indicated that Mr. Mahdi was in fact using the tractor at the time to further the business interests of J&J, and therefore the coverage was excluded. And that's why the potentiality rule doesn't apply, and that's why Empire wasn't at the table in the underlying action.
Well, what does your company cover? I can't imagine a person that would purchase a tractor trailer for just cruising on Sundays. Isn't almost all of it is commercial use? What do you cover?
Well, Your Honor, I think what we would cover is precisely what the court in 1997 was faced with in the Empire Fire case discussed before. What about when he's finished with his route and he's going home, if he chooses on his own time to get the truck repaired? It's called a non-trucking policy, and likely the premiums reflect the fact that it won't really be used that often for that purpose, and that there's another policy, in this case the Progressive policy, that covers it for the bulk of its use. But exactly the situation in the Empire Fire case.
So you cover it. Suppose they said, we want you to haul something. And he goes out there for the front load, and they said, no, come back 12 hours from now and get the load. So you cover when he's going back home.
Yeah, that's my sense of it. I mean, the policy is called a non-trucking policy. So it's to cover him when he's not using the tractor for trucking of freight or to further the interests of the trucking company, the lessee.
So what if he gets a sandwich for lunchtime while he's hauling, but he drives over to a restaurant, and that's just for lunch, but not hauling? Do you cover the lunch trip?
Your Honor, if he was on the way, and that's really what happened here, I mean, I think that's what appellant is arguing here, is that he was going to stop to get something to eat. But ultimately, the trip he took, and I think the court recognizes earlier, the trip he took was precipitated by the contract he had with J&J that said, call us every day, and that Tracy, the dispatcher, said, come to the Jessup warehouse. The fact that he decided that at the time he had in his mind to stop to get a bite, in this kind of specific situation, our policy would not cover that because he's ultimately on the way to pick up the load. And that's similar to the Mahaffey case that I cited in my brief, the Fifth Circuit case, where the person was told there would be a load for him the next day. He was on his way there and decided to go to a motel to be ready to take the load. The court in the Fifth Circuit in that case held that the reason he was going to the motel was to be ready to pick up the load, and therefore it was in the furtherance of the commercial interests of the trucking company. And that's what would happen here. It really is a very limited coverage, and its name, I think, specifically states that. It's for bobtailing. It's for non-trucking when you're not involved in the business of the company to who it's leased.
Why isn't Progressive on the hook for this judgment?
I believe they should have been. I think, Your Honor.
What is the problem in getting Progressive to cover this particular incident?
Well, Your Honor, Empire is the defendant in this case.
I understand that, but I just don't understand. It seems to me so often, you know, we seek in law and litigation the most complicated way of doing things. You know, and it seemed to me that this incident would be squarely in the middle of the J&J and the Progressive insurance policy for the commercial use of the tractor. That's what that policy covers. That's what was happening here.
Your Honor, my sense is that Progressive was, I mean, J&J was represented by counsel. Mahdi was not. My sense is that Progressive, I think the record, it may have a letter in it discussing this, but Progressive, I think, told Mr. Blumenthal that it didn't have any record of that truck being on its policy, which under law doesn't matter. And MCS 90, you know, the endorsement of the federal regulations require you to cover, require coverage regardless of whether the vehicle is specifically listed. I don't know, for some reason, Empire was seen as a better, easier target. Maybe it's because Mr. Mahdi wasn't involved. I don't know. It's a question, you know, that I think the court rightfully asked the appellant. I think that, that ultimately, many of the cases I cited in my brief are that exact situation where there's the lessor's insurer and the lessee's insurer, and the question is who owes the coverage. And ultimately, it's, if it's business use, the answer is it's the lessor trucking company who owes the coverage, and that's really
and
who
that
should
would
be here.
That seem to be the straightforward answer here. That's the answer that the cases have given.
I agree, Your Honor, and I'm sorry that I wasn't really pulling the strings on how this
no,
thing
I'm
went
not,
about.
I'm not faulting you. I'm just, the situation is frustrating to me because it seemed to me we have the wrong insurance company.
I would agree, Your Honor. With regard to the collateral estoppel, which is what the court focused on in its early in its questioning of the appellant. The conflict that that Your Honor recognized, in fact, existed. Under Brohan versus Transamerica, Empire would not have been allowed to litigate its coverage obligations during the same case as it was defending Mr. Mahdi. That simply isn't allowed under Maryland law because the two are intertwined. The question of who he was working for at the time is a question that was the subject of the underlying litigation. So Empire could not have litigated that issue. I would also note and echo the court's question that that in the case below, Mr. Blumenthal basically could have been opening for either of the two parties because he specifically said in his opening statement, I expect them to walk away, and he then said, ironically, I'm going to be arguing that they shouldn't be on the hook. That certainly is not a case that's litigated on the merits, and that should result in my client being collaterally estopped from litigating the question of the business use exclusion here. With regard to the distinction between respondeat superior and business use, while it's true that the Court of Special Appeals in the Empire Fire versus Liberty Mutual case cited the Lime City Mutual Ohio case, it happened to be in that case that court in Ohio compared respondeat superior to the business use exclusion. They are not. That does not make them the same. The fact that that court found that respondeat superior existed doesn't mean that in order to successfully rely on the business use exclusion, the insurer has to prove a respondeat superior relationship. They're simply not the same. And the facts in the cases we cited make that clear. If I'm on my way to pick up something, I can go whatever route I want. I can stop for lunch if I want. I can go to a motel in certain cases if I want. So I'm not in a situation of being in a vicarious liability situation as it relates to the lessor trucking company.
I guess the part of the difference owes to the difference between employee status and independent contractor status.
Correct, Your Honor. There can't be any dispute that Mr. Mahdi, this was a business use, regardless of the fact that he was stopping for lunch. First of all, he hadn't even done that. He was driving on the highway towards the warehouse. And again, his whole reason for being there was triggered by the call that he made to J&J. With regard to what went on just briefly in the trial court, the same lease that's now part of the record, the same contract between J&J.
There's no factual dispute that he was acting under the J&J dispatch, is there?
I don't believe so. I think that the distinction that the appellant tries to make is the question of whether he was using the word of art dispatch, and I guess that's a point.
Well, he was. There's no question that he was acting under J&J's instructions to go to the giant market in Jessup.
Correct, and there's no dispute that he called there pursuant to the contract he had with J&J. That his obligation was to call in and see what what load was available for him, if any. So according to the record, Mr. Blumenthal wasn't handed the contract between J&J and Empire's insured, Mr. Mahdi, until the morning of trial. Obviously, that document is a key document because it basically puts Mr. Mahdi and J&J in the situation that's governed by the federal regulations, that they are the lessor, he is the lessee, and therefore they were obligated to cover him. In order for there to be collateral estoppel, that would have had to have been litigated, and it wasn't.
All right. I think we understand your position, and I'm going to ask my colleagues for whatever questions they might have. If you don't walk away.
No.
Roger, do you have any questions?
No.
Yeah. All right, we thank you, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honors, I cannot find a different Maryland case. The case that seems closest to what we have here is the 1997 Empire Fire and Marine case. I would just attempt to distinguish it in, I think, a critical respect. Before I do it, I'll concede that important to that decision was the fact that in the 1997 Court of Special Appeals case, the driver was going home.
Can I ask you just a practical question?
Yes, Your Honor.
After reading the Empire policy that your client had,
yes, Your Honor,
how could you conclude that this wasn't a business that you should have been after Progressive to say you have an obligation because that defendant is a covered defendant? Under that policy, why wouldn't you conclude that Mr. Mahdi was a covered defendant under that policy that J&J had? Not responding as superior, forget about that issue. It's a covered driver because he was a lessee. Why wouldn't that be the natural conclusion you would come to and say, listen, if necessary, you'll bring bad faith against them if they don't defend them or whatever. I mean, why wouldn't you?
Right. There was a great deal of contact prior to and even imminently before the trial, right, and the underlying action. There is an action pending, actually, in the Fourth Circuit against Progressive, much in the same, pledged in much the same way as this matter was. The distinction here was that it would seem that the collateral estoppel issue really, maybe ideally, had decided the question whether Empire was on the hook. And there are distinctions in fact. Mr. Mahdi checked into a car. He clicks in. That begins his day. Over and over again, he's urging that as he's begging Empire Fire and Marine.
So you thought a finding on respondeat superior would be preclusive, or not preclusive, but be dispositive on the question whether or not it was a business use?
I mean, I certainly think if you look at the elements of collateral estoppel, one after the other, and you think about the potentiality rule and the failure to...
That's really going to broaden collateral estoppel.
It does. If you Venn diagram it, you know, in the sense of it would be respondeat superior is here, right, but business is out here. Well, so you could be not respondeat superior, but still be within the, sure, the business exception.
Well, the Lime case that the 1997 Court of Special Appeals Empire case cites with approval does say, look, implicitly, the analyses are the same. And really, the question very much is exactly the same in this instance. So I did think that it was an issue previously litigated.
Is anything further, sir?
No, Your Honor. I just thank you very much.
Let me take a brief recess.
You'll talk to the camera.
Let me take a brief recess.